Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you on a Tuesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, and you a lot to get to. Some college football, some Major League Baseball, and Husker baseball. Mitch Sherman going to be with us in 15 minutes of ESPN.com. Hour two, we start off with Blair Kirkhoff of the Kansas City Star. And you're welcome to join us. Can tap the line with Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House. Numbers to get in, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. On Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning. Now, assuming our phones and tablets and computers can work the next 2 hours, I am going to lose my mind with the wireless setup yet again, once again. I'd plug into a hard line if I could. That didn't freaking work here. So there's my little two-second tantrum. Hope you're doing okay. Wonderful to have you. And TJ, how's it going, brother?
It's going all right.
You stay up and watch the NBA last night?
I did.
Yeah, Pop was ready to hit the wine bar.
That he was. He likes himself some good old wine.
He likes himself some
red. And he likes to wine, too, a little bit.
A little bit. He likes to wine just a touch. That's okay. Blair Kirkhoff and on the way, Mitch Sherman. And you, if you want to join us. So we'll get into Darren Erstad, his award, much deserved. Big Ten Coach of the Year. The selection process littered with Nebraskans on the all Big Ten teams. That is a great sign of really where your talent level is at and where your program is at. But I want to start off, and I got this from Nick and Greg this morning. They texted it to me. And SB Nation, good blog, a lot of college football stuff. We'll start with this. We'll dive into some quarterback talk, too, in the Big Ten next hour. Okay. So SB Nation, they do a lot of college football. This is by Bud Elliott, and it asks a pretty good question. Do 2018 college football recruits even remember your team's last national championship? Ouch. So the question's no. And it kind of gets into an interesting discussion here on tradition, on history. Because there's two sides of the street on this. You grew up with it. You love it. You know it as a Nebraska fan. And why do you love it, know it, and cherish it as a Nebraska fan? Because you've been good for half a century. You can talk to grandpa, can talk to your dad. You yourself attended X number of games. You're a part of it. So it is near and dear to your heart, and it's absolutely something to be proud about. And not everybody is like you, the Nebraska fan, or me, the kid that grew up going to West Stadium since the late 80s. The kids being recruited right now, I mean, it is a whole different, obviously, demo, but it's a whole different mindset. How are you going to relate and tap in and connect? You're going to do it on social media first. But what's important to those kids is who won the national championship in 1997. Important? Maybe if it was important to their dad or a coach that they lean on for decision making.
Or if they grew up in Nebraska.
But for the California kids, and I'm thinking of the Calabasas kids, What do they know?
They could care less.
What do they know? They know Keyshawn's dad kicked butt and took names in the Rose Bowl in 1996. Okay?
Some of them might not even know that.
Well, there's pictures.
They just know his dad was a really good football player.
There's pictures of Keyshawn Sr. all over the Coliseum that they grew up with. Okay? So they know that. That same era, Nebraska was mowing people down. So I want to get into this SB Nation discussion here. And you have a picture of Pete Carroll holding the football, the crystal football, on the cover here. And it comes down to the Y2K. What was I doing in the year 2000? I was hauling a camera around in year three of broadcasting school at the university. It's trying to pass my film course. Because some of us are a little shaky with the camera. But Pete Carroll had it going. They won a championship in 03. Split one in 04. I'm off in the 03 part. I think that was LSU. But my point is SC came back. And as long as you're a blue blood, as long as you're elite and you have decades of success, you can get back to being elite. But you got to ask yourself, is this recruiting class, kids that were born in 2000 and 2001, where was Nebraska football at in 2000? Well, they finished eighth in the country. They were the preseason number one team in the country in 2000. Where were they in 2001? Played for a national championship. Eric Crouch won the Heisman. Beyond that, like your birth year or if you're a year old, beyond that, Nebraska football has moved down a peg or two in the national landscape. But you've had other programs kind of go up and down. Back when some of these kids were born, Alabama football was a tire fire.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're back. USC was dominant for about a 7 to 10 year stretch. Texas was dominant for about a 7 to 10 year stretch. Notre Dame, I mean, that was the Charlie Weiss era in 05. So you really got to kind of know your kid's personality that you're recruiting when and if you break out the nostalgia card. And I'm also asking that you put on the professor hat, professor of history, because the way you can relate and connect to some of these 16, 17, 18-year-olds via social media is teach some history. And Nebraska's doing it. The academic All-Americans, they're throwing out there. The Heisman winners. The national championship angle. But what do you know about Nebraska football? And if you're a pro scout, if you're a high school coach, if you're a college coach that's around, Nebraska football is known for cranking out linemen, offensive and defensive linemen. That's never going to go out of style. And I know it's been a while since they've had high round draft pick caliber dudes, but you've got guys in the league on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And I think it depends here what you pitch, okay? And here's kind of the hierarchy. If you're going after a kid in the West Coast, or if you're going after a kid in Florida, if you're going after a kid in Texas, I mean, I think Texas is a little different area because, I mean, it is kind of like Varsity Blues, the movie, where your dream is supposed to be to grow up and be the best player on your area team. Texas football is that important. So be the man at running back or defensive end or quarterback. It's kind of like what your parents want for you in the state of Texas. Well, Norman Jean's going to grow up and be a captain of the cheerleading team, and Junior's going to grow up and be the quarterback. And he's going to go play and do great things at whatever school, but he's going to be the man. He's going to be the high school quarterback in the state of Texas on a championship team. So history and nostalgia is still important in the state of Texas. Out west, history and tradition is okay, but above all, is it going to get me playing time? Is it going to get me to the league? So you got to know your areas, you got to know your personalities. Okay. Social media is huge for Nebraska. They've adapted well here with this. But I just wonder here, what is there a timeline that you have where you kind of give up on a team being elite? And let's look at this 15-year window, okay? The last 15 years of college football, there's really been only two teams that have kind of gone unscathed, in my opinion. They have not. They've had down years, but their down year was 8-4. Ohio State and Oklahoma are about it the last 15 years, okay? Sweater Vest came in 01, I think, or 02. It's before that. It's probably 2000. But he won a championship, and Ohio State's played for three. And they're still great now because they got Urban. They won one 2 years ago. Do championships matter to kids anymore? They want to go play for a national championship? I think kind of.
I think the more recent ones, yeah.
I think it's okay, but I think the championship's a means to an end. If I play on a national championship team, I'm going to be seen and reviewed, and it'll get me to the NFL. I think that's it. That's the long and short of it here. So is history important? It is to the fans. Is history important to recruits? I'm going to go 80-20, no. Should it be important to them? Do you need to make it important to them? And if you're Nebraska, how much do you still lean on the history side of things? And it's also obviously in reference to SB Nation, their question here. They had a coach, an all-pro linebacker, made a comment to his position coach. This is NFL. They don't know expletive, he said, of the current recruits, and I don't think they read about past greats or watch replays of them like we did either. They don't watch as many games going on now either. If we don't tell them, they don't know. Sobering, but probably true. And I think it kind of comes down to the AAU mindset and then the 7-on-7 mindset, where they want to go play, have fun, and be with their buddies. And I don't even think winning's not important, but I don't think it's as important because they're desensitized to losing. They just go play and play and play and play versus trying to play and win a championship. That's not all kids. But I think that mindset of let's just go play and have fun versus let's go win and destroy somebody, I think that's very true too. And the last part of this that I think where Nebraska, they haven't won a championship since 97. They won a conference championship since 99. I think one area while you're in this title chase, this recency and relevancy discussion, well, you do have a relevant player that's still in the NFL. You got a few of them. But one guy that I think kids today that are considering Nebraska, they're considering what Nebraska's been defensively. I think Ndamukong Suh is still a card you can play if you're Nebraska. Absolutely.
For sure.
And I think if you're going down south, I think Amir Abdullah's a card you can play. You can do both of those. They're recognized. Their style, their substance. They're guys that kids, okay, so Nebraska's been 9-4, 10-4, and maybe there's been some embarrassing losses or they've not been on a grand stage. But man, Amir was good. Man, Sue was big time. Those are a couple of things you can sell, and I think you do. That's where you go. And right now, you pump getting back to that championship level, and you pump that you got a number of guys on staff right now that'll help you in school and that'll get you to the NFL. That is it. That is your pitch, because clearly what happened 21 years ago is in one ear and out the other if it's at all listened to by a number of recruits.
Oh, yeah. Bud in this article is just stating the obvious, man. Like, kids today with their phones, all the different things they can do, like, obviously they could go and look up the history of the school, but that's not very exciting. Like, the present and the future, that's what's exciting. Augmented reality, virtual reality games, graphics or video games. Like, the amount of things that kids have the opportunity to do, like, I think why would they care about past history?
I think history's a little bit of it. I mean, if a kid's 16 right now and clicking on to Huskers.com. I mean, his question is, if I don't know anything about Nebraska, are they good? Are they elite? Do they suck? I mean, seriously, that's what I'm asking. Where am I going? What am I walking into? And the history books can tell you, you've won here before, which means you can win here again.
Yeah, but if I'm that recruit, I just Google all-time Nebraska record. Like, I'm not going to take the time to go to Huskers. Like, that's what I think.
But see, who knows?
I got other cooler things to do.
See, but...
And I'm a guy who grew up, history classes were my favorite, but even sometimes I can get bored with history.
No, absolutely.
But like, so kids today.
But what's your emphasis, what's your priority on it when it comes to pitching? And it, again, you can kind of tell by the kid's personality. Mm-hmm. How introspective is he? What's his story? Does he give a crap?
Yeah.
And I think most don't, but you need to be able to connect to them.
Look, you have a staff that does a great job with social media, and the way to get people interested about the history is to incorporate the social media and history together.
Well, and they have, because you see, I think
and they need to do more.
And I think I think Cavs tweet last week where you got a bunch of dudes, Remington, Shields, Raiola, that pipeline. So we'll see. We'll talk to Mitch Sherman here. His thoughts on Husker baseball, Nebraska history. Hail Varsity continues.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
A little less than an hour away, Blair Kirchhoff going to be with us. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, your chance at a six-month subscription. Also, to HailVarsity.com shortly. We welcome in Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how we doing?
Doing well. Chris, how are you?
Doing all right. We started the show off talking a little bit about the Blue Blood programs out there, and SB Nation put out a story on the fact that your Y2K babies right now are the ones being recruited, and were your recruits alive the last time you won a championship? It's an interesting question. And my question to you, you know recruiting well, you've spent time covering it, and I think it kind of goes case by case, and I think in the area of Texas, tradition is maybe emphasized more than other parts of the country, just because I think of varsity blues and kids want to grow up and be that high school quarterback and beyond. How much tradition would you use in recruitment today? And I know you got to use it via social media, but is that kind of your ace? Do you use, say you're Nebraska, all that you've accomplished and done well the last 50 years, do you use that for recruits? Do they care about it, do you think?
Yeah, sure. First of all, I heard nothing you said after we're now recruiting kids who were born in the year 2000. That just that blew my mind, and I'm at a loss. So, I heard it, but
it blocked it out.
Yeah, my mind went completely blank after that. After that point, it's going to take 15 minutes to reset. So goodbye. I mean, if you're Nebraska, for sure, you show the kids the trophies in your football office. You talk to them about the great things that Nebraska has done as a program. You remind them of the opportunity that they have in Lincoln and how that opportunity was in large part created by the guys who came before them, before they were born in many cases. So I don't think that players are short-sighted. Today's prospects, for everything you might say about the millennial generation or whatever it's called, the kids that are being recruited now, their age bracket, I give them enough credit to understand that they realize there is importance to what happened that before they were old enough to see it and comprehend it. And just because you didn't see Nebraska winning conference titles, national titles, you can still come to the stadium and recognize the great history of that program. Same is the case at other places that are in a situation like Nebraska. Take a school like Tennessee, or you know, there are certainly others around the country also that have not won championships in this century, yet will recruit and promote to prospects their history and tradition. So the longer it gets from a time when you were very successful, and I mean by like a top five type success, a college football playoff type success as a program, the more difficult it is to resonate on that level with recruits, but it's still something that is important for Nebraska to sell in its program. Their parents remember, their coaches remember, and those people also will have an impact on the decision that these kids make.
Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio. I think you just got to kind of know the kid's personality. And
for sure,
it's something you use, but it may not be the first card you play when it comes to recruiting. And I'm just wondering how, and again, it's case by case with the importance of you know, what place am I going to? Are they elite? Are they good? Are they a bad program? But, you know, I got to thinking with your answer, Nebraska, Tennessee, and then you got Miami. I mean, those are three programs that are pretty good year in, year out, or have the ability to be good quickly because they're still, as I was saying earlier, last segment, you know, there's no expiration date yet on some of these programs that are considered blue blood. And I know Miami's not been great for decades, but they've been good long enough, you know, Schnellenberger. So I look at some of these programs that you've had an insane amount of roller coastering the last 15 to 17 years. And you've had two programs really stay far away from losing their place. You had one down year of Ohio State when Fickell was babysitting, and Oklahoma's had a couple 8-4, 8-5. But other than that, they've been knocking on the door. Those are really the only two programs I can think of that haven't been either down or up within that time frame.
Well, if you're just limiting it to this century, then yeah. I mean, Oklahoma went through a period after Barry Switzer retired or left OU that was worse than what we've seen at Nebraska over the last few years. I mean, Nebraska's had a lot of good seasons by the general measure in college football. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't won championships. You know, you mentioned Miami. And, you know, Miami has won a national championship in this century. Granted, it was at the very beginning of the century, mm-hmm. but that 2001 team,
it's great.
It's, you know, it's close to going as far back as the 1997 Nebraska team. Mm-hmm. And if you're a prospect today who's 17 years old, you may have been alive when that team, you were alive when that team played, but you might as well have not been because you're certainly not going to remember it. So, you know, there are other programs out there that are suffering from the same thing other than just Miami or Nebraska or Tennessee. You know, Penn State is an example of a program that has not done much on the national level until this last season when it went and played in a Rose Bowl and won a Big Ten championship. But nationally, that's another place. You know, even a school like Michigan, which has definitely come back into its own in the national spotlight because of what Jim Harbaugh brings to that place, it's been a while. There is not a Big Ten program outside of Ohio State that has won championships beyond the conference level for quite some time. Ohio State has carried that Big Ten flag, and I think people right now look at the Big Ten and they say, hey, it's Ohio State and Michigan, or Michigan and Ohio State, depending on how you want to look at it. But a lot of that is glitz and glamour in the case of Michigan right now. It's, you know, the results still need to come, and it's promising. And Harbaugh has done some nice things in his first two seasons. But when it all comes down to it, it's not a whole lot different than what Mike Riley has done. It's just that he's a more notable figure in the game, and people are just drawn to his personality.
Mitch, got about 3 minutes here. Nebraska baseball, Big Ten champs. They knock out that demon that is a major sport without claiming a Big Ten championship since Nebraska moved into the Big Ten. You know Coach Erstad. You've covered him. What's your reaction to not only his Coach of the Year award today, but just the job he's done at Nebraska this season?
I think he's coming into his own as a head coach, and that definitely takes time. It's not because you were a Major League Baseball player and you have the passion for the university. You know, those are, he knows the game, has always known the game, of course, or he's known it for 20 plus years well enough to be a coach at this level. But you still have a period of growth that's required, and it's why you don't see a lot of guys do what he did and go from being a major league player or a professional player to almost right into being a head coach. He had a small window of transition, but basically he went from retiring into that head coach's seat at Nebraska. And like anybody else, it's going to take time to learn the trade. And, you know, I think he's progressed and deserving of this honor that has come, and the consistency that Nebraska has started to show over the last 2 to 3 seasons is encouraging. The thing that they've yet to conquer is playing their best in June, and you face better competition in June, and Nebraska's likely going to have to go on the road again this year for a regional and go somewhere where they're not the favorite and where they're playing, you know, probably against a major conference team from the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12 or the Pac-12. And that's just a different kind of challenge than what you see weekend in and weekend out in the Big Ten. It's the reality of college baseball. There may not be a host in the Big Ten this year, unless maybe Nebraska does it if they win the tournament in Indianapolis. I don't necessarily see that. So that's the next step for Nebraska, and good for them for getting to that point and for finding this kind of consistency in the regular season. But I know there are a lot of people in the state who remember well what it's like to taste that kind of success in June. And I know Darren Erstad wants to take the program back to that level. So you've won a Big Ten title. This is as good a time as any to go out and take that next step. They've got a team with guys who have experience in the postseason, and that's such an important part of getting success in the postseason is having been there before. So, I'm interested to watch what happens over the next couple, 3 weeks.
Mitch, about 60 seconds. What are you working on? What's coming up from you?
You know, we just talked about baseball, and I'm starting to turn my attention to college baseball. I'll be interested in those conference tournaments, storylines that come out of conference tournaments all across the country this weekend, and looking forward to Monday and Memorial Day and writing about college baseball. June's a fun time of the year, and the great thing for me is that it all comes to me. This is the one time of year where they don't have to go anywhere. I can just drive downtown, and looking forward to seeing over the next few weeks who makes it to Omaha this year and covering all those storylines that come into our town.
That'll be a lot of fun. Can't wait to read it and follow it. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com, and at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, we'll run you down next week. Always fun to catch up, and thanks for taking a few minutes.
For sure. Anytime. Thanks, Chris.
Take care. There he is, Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. HailVarsity.com. We'll spend a few minutes, get you caught up on some of the hardware handed out for Nebraska baseball. Next hour, we'll hit some NFL news and notes, quarterback situations in the Big Ten. Blair Kirkhoff coming up. Hail Varsity Radio continues.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Big thanks to Mitch Sherman. About 20 minutes away, Blair Kirkhoff going to be with us. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. We're going to run down Blair Kirkhoff, some Royals thoughts, some Chiefs thoughts, some thoughts on Nebraska football regarding the history and tradition angle you play with recruits. Good stuff by SB Nation. On that, we started it off, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865, numbers to dial up if you want to join us. And we'll spend a few minutes here passing along some news and notes with Husker baseball. So Coach Hurstad is your Big Ten Coach of the Year. That is nice. That is important. That is proper.
Yep, well-deserved.
You win the league. And here's the thing, and if you ask baseball dudes that know it, eat, sleep it, and we just talked to one and Mitch Sherman, there is an unfair perception still about the Big Ten. It's better, but it's still kind of like, well, it's probably thought of, it's the equivalent of Big 12 football right now. When you think of...
Maybe not.
Conferences.
Mm.
And that
maybe, yeah.
And that might be kind because Big 12 football at least has Oklahoma football. There's no Oklahoma football for Big 10 baseball.
I know that stigma is there for me for Big 10 baseball.
No,
I've never thought it's been...
No, but I think the part of it being, air quote, wide open, and it was mentioned in the press conference today, honestly, if you win a league where it seems like anyone can win it, that sometimes is tougher than a lot of other situations. And so Nebraska awarded appropriately with Big Ten and the accolades. So Coach Hurstad, your Coach of the Year, and that is something he can put in his office, polish it up, show his athletic director, and show the fan base. So let me, and we said this yesterday, maybe you have someone you know that doubted him and his ability. And it takes a while to lead, and it takes a while to settle in that role. And he's getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's appropriately awarded for it.
Yeah.
All Big Ten first team, Jake Myers, utility, no-brainer. And Myers' offensive numbers not close to what they were last year from an RBI and power standpoint, but he led off for the betterment of the team, and he also won 8 games, 8-1 as a pitcher. So there you have it. You have Schreiber, whose home run numbers quite a bit down, but this team did not have a lot of pop, nor production, not production, but nor protection in the lineup. 5 home runs, his RBI and average totals, very impressive. Schreiber, super talented offensive player, deadly with 2 strikes. So he is right there. Jake Adams of Iowa, your player of the year. But third team, this is nice, this is impressive. Our guest yesterday, Altavilla, third team, all Big Ten. That is nice. Also for Nebraska, you have... Roskam as the Big Ten freshman team member. That is big time. And also Hohensee,
third teamer
for all Big Ten performance for Nebraska. So,
and then your sportsmanship award,
Ben Miller. Big Ben.
Sportsmanship. The only missing piece is you.
Yeah. Is that a PSA you've quoted me?
That's an NSAA like quote.
I used to think sportsmanship was overrated. I embrace it fully now.
I still think it's overrated. And so does the NFL, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, that'll happen later. Let's talk a little bit about recruiting. Now, TJ, I know and remember how happy you were with the recruiting class. This is a report from Rivals. 3 members of the 2017 class have academic work to do, or there's a waiting game on whether or not they can get to Lincoln. Let me tell you who they are. Elijah Blades, key safety.
Yeah.
DeAndre Thomas, defensive tackle. DeAndre Watts. He's out of Plano. He's a big-time get. So two mountains of men that you want to put in that nose guard spot and one safety are waiting. And it may work out okay. You have a little bit better academic background than I do, Teej. Elijah Blades needs grades in four of his classes. He's waiting. That seems like a lot.
That does.
Does that not seem like a high number and you don't know right now? He might have to do some summer school, an online course to get things handled. DeAndre Thomas, he graduated, but he's waiting on his final GPA.
Okay.
And then you have DeAndre Watts. Needs to improve his SAT by a couple of points. So you tell me, to get into college, you need a sweet combo of a good SAT and a good GPA, correct? Or if you're low on one end, you need a higher number on the other.
Yep, you got to be in the top half of your class. You got to get at least a 21 on the ACT.
Okay.
And I'm forgetting the third requirement, but you had to have at least two out of the three.
Okay.
If you had two out of the three, you'd be golden.
Okay.
So, I don't know the SAT score because that's a East-West Coast type thing.
Sure. Okay. That's fine. You know, this would be not good.
No.
This would be awful because these are three of your, not just high profile, but three of your need recruits.
Oh. And Elijah might be your most high profile guy.
He's high profile, but he's a guy that you want in here to go make plays.
Mm-hmm.
But with DeAndre and Deontay, both those guys, if you're a Nebraska fan, you want them in front of Perella pronto. Like, get here in June, get around the Davis twins, get around Mick, start learning what's up. And then Coach Perella can get around you and coach you in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if you can A, play, or B, need to redshirt, but let's figure it out. Can't do either if you're not eligible.
Yeah.
Is it too stringent? I mean, if you graduate high school and you have an okay enough SAT, ACT, shouldn't that be good? Now, the whole Blades thing, I'm like, sweet God, four classes, maybe summer online work.
Yeah, sounds like he's got some work to do to catch up.
Did you shake your head at your teacher? Remember, like, career ed? That's what we had. And they told you from day one, this might have been 9th or 10th grade, where it's one of those courses where they teach you how to, like, balance your checkbook. They look at stock. I mean, it was great. But they tell you from day one, don't jack around now. It will kill you later. And that's a lot of times what happens. Freshman, sophomore year grades. We'll wind down hour one next.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
All right, exciting 30 for 30 news. Let that sink in for a minute. What 30 for 30 are you most anticipating?
I mean, how about the Husker football one?
I know. That's not the news I have. Same. You were on the same wavelength.
I was just thinking, where's an update on that?
Yeah, where's it going? We know where the footage has been involved. I have a different piece of good news, 30 for 30-wise. And depending on if I get yelled at by the wife because she wants to watch something, for the most part, I get to watch. I'll be flipping through, and the NBA has been so god-awful this year, I've been able to catch up on some 30 for 30s. But I've got great news.
Woo!
What did I hear?
Woo!
Yes.
Woo!
Do we have a longer? To be the man? Maybe?
Woo! I've got the style and profile like never before. But to be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo! Right here. I'm the man. Woo!
Nature Boy is the title. ESPN will do their first professional wrestling 30 for 30. Mike Babcock just high-fived himself.
No, I like this.
Ric Flair, the documentary on the Nature Boy, mentioned back in 2015, November of 2015, that it's been in production. It'll be all good. It will be released September 8th.
Oh, still got to wait a bit.
We're closer. Rory Karff, we've had Rory on before.
Yeah.
Rory did I Hate Christian Laettner in the Book of Manning. Rory's
both
doing
outstanding.
This. So that is sweet.
That is sweet.
It'll have Vince McMahon, Sting, The Undertaker, Ricky Steamboat, and Flair's kids and first wife. Arn Anderson, Tony, and Tully Blanchard also. And final version going to be 90 to 120 minutes. That includes commercials. That's big time. And
that
it's
is.
Got some major folks that you grew up watching on, whether it was, it might have been TNT or TBS.
Yeah.
TBS.
Yeah.
On Saturday nights.
WWE. I was more of a WCW guy, but okay. Enjoyed both of them. I was going to say, is there another wrestler for you that you'd love to see a 30 for 30 on?
I mean, I kind of feel like I got Hulk Hogan down. Just, because he's the other dude.
And he had a reality show, yeah.
They're also doing an Andre the Giant documentary.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because Goldberg was one of my favorites. And
see, that's after me. I think The Rock.
Diamond Dallas Page.
I think
that
The Rock would be kind of cool, too.
Oh,
but I feel like I know a little bit about him. I mean, I remember seeing
Randy
him.
Randy Savage.
Macho Man, may he rest in peace. He hit a pole. No, I'll tell you this, though. I remember seeing The Rock on the sideline of that Orange Bowl against Nebraska because he was on the team. Mm-hmm. And my old buddy and former chiropractor, I told you he played in Miami because he played for Coach Ed. He also played with
The Rock.
So I think The Rock's kind of cool. And the only reason I know or get into him a little bit, it's because, you know, Carson was so huge into the G.I. Joe movie that came out, the second one. He was in it. And that little dark-haired hottie was in it, too. That was sweet.
The Rock. He's a good actor. I enjoy him.
Yeah, he's fine. But we get Ric Flair in September, a 30 for 30. That
is
awesome. Next hour, your chance at HailVarsity.com online subscription. Blair Kirchhoff up next. Woo!
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk some Chiefs, some Royals, and some college football. Kansas City Stars Blair Kirchhoff with us at Blair Kirchhoff on Twitter. Blair, it's been a little while, but how you doing? Great to catch up.
Yeah, doing great, Chris. Hope you're doing okay.
Doing well, doing well. And sent you an article, and I wanted to start with this. And it's in reference to a topic we've been hitting on today, and that's kind of the blue blood expiration date. Those power college football programs that have, I don't want to say been dormant, but have been a far cry from championships. They haven't won one in forever. And you look at the recruiting calendar, kids that were born, you know, Y2K kids are being recruited. They're signing. And there's a handful of programs that's the last time they contended for a title, Nebraska being one of them. I wanted to get your take. Do you think history means as much to the new crop of recruits, the 15 through 17-year-olds?
I don't know if history's ever meant a whole lot to incoming recruits. And I say that, you know, somewhat sadly, because it means so much to fans. Alumni, to you know, the followers of specific teams. I mean, it's why, you know, national championship years, conference championship years are, you know, engraved in stadiums, football stadiums. It's why those type of banners hang inside basketball arenas. I mean, it's And in our part of the country, you know, we all the fans of Nebraska football know about its titles, and all the fans of Kansas basketball know about their titles. But you know, for kids, you know, for kids who are coming of age as prospects and developing into great young athletes, no, I think the world's changed for them. Remember, for everybody, really, but especially for them. And there are so many entertainment options for them that, unlike people of our generation, maybe a little bit younger than me and others, when all you had was, you know, your one or two college football games a week or your one Major League Baseball game to watch or whatever, there's just so many, many options for kids these days. I don't think they're invested in sports as fans the way that that maybe older generations were. And so I think it's more difficult for them, or more understandable, I should say, for them to not know who last year's national championship team was. You know, did they even watch Clemson beat Alabama? You know, do basketball players even watch North Carolina beat Gonzaga? I don't think it's terribly important to them. What's important to them is what opportunities there are for them at that moment, and where can they take full advantage of those opportunities. I think this has been a progression over the last, 30, 25, 20 years or so. I have noticed it. Just sort of it's not a disrespect, it's not a disregard, it's just a, you know, it's not a priority to know what the heritage, or the history, the tradition of a program is for recruits.
You know, the priority part is right on. And when I look at kind of the landscape and culture of football, kids are playing it, they're enjoying it. Same with basketball. But it's more about in the moment, are you with your friends, and it's the AAU 7-on-7 type mindset where you're just going to go play, have fun, and again, it's about the opportunity and depth chart. I'll say this, though. I think there are kids out there that while your team might not be winning a national championship, I think if you have some of those flashpoint players that obviously make your team good, but it can draw kids that while they may not be hardcore fans, they'll get your attention. And I think Nebraska still has some relevancy because Ndamukong Suh is not that long ago. He's still in the NFL. Or you look at the kids that have played at Kansas, Embiid, right? Now with the 76ers. So I think if you have some splash players, that can get you maybe as much mileage as maybe a conference championship or a New Year's Day Six Bowl. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that's possible. But I bet if you ask Bill Self or John Calipari or Urban Meyer or Nick Saban, you know, some of the guys who, Mike Krzyzewski, who we consider, you know, close to, if not at the top of their professions, I think they'll tell you that it gets, you know, more difficult year after year recruiting and using, you know, the recent success of a program as a bargaining chip. You know, maybe I think for like Kentucky basketball, you have the idea that if you go to Kentucky and you're a great freshman, you're going to get selected in the NBA draft. And so I think Kentucky gets to use that. And maybe to a lesser extent, Kansas does with Josh Jackson this past year and Andrew Wiggins a couple years ago. And Embiid, as you mentioned, it's a little bit less of a, probably less of a bargaining chip in football, although certainly the programs that are at the top now, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, you know, they do have a recent track record of the NFL draft to support their recruiting pitches out there, and maybe some of the programs don't have that. You know, as far as, you know, if you're a Nebraska recruit and you're going through the halls there and you see a photo of Ndamukong Suh, you know, in an NFL, you know, whatever NFL uniform he was in at the time, and you see him in a Nebraska uniform, I have to think that has some influence, you know, that mm-hmm. you can get there from here, and not only can you get there from here, but you can start at the next level if you come here. I think that does matter, and schools certainly, you know, use that to exploit that, use that to their full advantages, and they should.
Blair Kirkhoff, couple minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Blair Kirkhoff on Twitter, Kansas City Star. Blair, let's talk Chiefs for a second, and it's been about a month since the draft, and KC traded up. They got Mahomes. What's your reaction to him? And I know he's got time to learn, but did you like the pick? You had an opportunity to get a number of quarterbacks, not Trubisky, obviously, but did you like what Kansas City did in going with Mahomes?
I did. I liked it because it was really for Kansas City and this organization. It was really outside the box thinking. I mean, they haven't drafted a quarterback in the first round since 1983, and their track record of successful quarterback draft picks, no matter the round, has been really poor. In 83, they drafted Todd Blackledge out of Penn State, and he ended up, I think, something like 14-12 as a starting quarterback for the Chiefs, but he ends up being the last drafted quarterback that the Chiefs drafted who won a game for the Chiefs. Every quarterback who's won a game since then, you know, in the 90s, the 2000s, was somebody who was brought in, and so it's way, way beyond time for the Chiefs to have drafted a quarterback and developed their own. So the question becomes: is Patrick Mahomes the guy? And you can be cynic and say, look, quarterbacks from that type of offense, Texas Tech's offense, haven't traditionally fared well in the NFL. I mean, traditionally, heck, they haven't been in the NFL. They don't get drafted. They don't. And ones that have been drafted don't stick, including Cliff Kingsbury, the current coach of the Raiders. And then quarterbacks in general from that offense, just don't do well. And Mahomes was. He was 13-16 as a starter at Texas Tech, but on the other side, he's got an incredible arm. I've seen tape of him, all 22 type tape of him, and he is he has got the physical tools, the ability, and I just trust Andy Reid, who knows a little bit about offense and quarterbacks, that they knew what they were doing when they identified him pretty early on in the process. They scouted just every one of his college games and then made the move to trade up with the Bills to move up 17 spots from 27 to 10 to take him. So he's not the guy this year. It's still Alex Smith's team, but I would not be surprised if we saw Patrick Mahomes as the number two quarterback for the Chiefs this year, and then perhaps being moving into the starting role next season.
What do you think won out for Andy Reid to go after Mahomes?
Well, a couple of things. I do think that the lack of playoff success, it's like the Chiefs have reached a certain level of success here, good enough to get to double-digit victories, good enough to make playoffs, but not good enough to succeed once they get there. And so you try to identify what's happening. And look, they ended up losing a game to the Steelers at Arrowhead Stadium last year, in which they could not stop Le'Veon Bell, but they could only get to the end zone twice, and ended up losing that game. I think it was 18-14 or 18-16, something like that. And so they had problems on both sides of the ball. But the fact that Alex Smith had 15 touchdowns and 8 interceptions while playing in 14 and a half games last year, I think, is something of an indicator that that you could probably get better at that position. Smith is starting his 13th NFL season. He's 41-20 as a starting quarterback. That's really, really good in a Chiefs uniform. This is, you know, not counting the San Francisco days. So there's enough there to like, and they think they can win with him. But they didn't have anybody in the pipeline. I mean, they just didn't. Other teams go out and draft their future quarterbacks. The Chiefs never did. This year they finally did it.
Blair, I want to talk Royals before we say goodbye. And is there a date in mind pre-trade deadline where it's kind of D-Day, for lack of a better term, with Kansas City and some of the roster options they have? What are you feeling? What are you hearing about this team that is just having so many problems offensively?
Yeah, no specific date, but the longer the Royals get into the season and the more they're just, you know, treading water or falling back in a very, you know, winnable American League Central, at least at the moment right now. I think everybody believes that the Indians have the goods to repeat as division and even American League champs if they could get it together They just haven't done so yet. And who knows about the Twins, the way Minnesota's been playing, especially against Kansas City. But it's for the Royals, they went into the season with more optimism, I think, than what the national media had for them. And they thought with their core group of players, with Hosmer, Moustakas, Kane, Perez, Escobar, Gordon, those guys who returned from the two AL pennant teams with a starting rotation that was certainly devastated by the loss of Yordano Ventura, but
sure.
But they felt good about the additions that they made. Nathan Carnes from the Mariners and Jason Hamill from the Cubs, along with Kennedy and Vargas and Duffy, they thought they had the makings of a pretty good staff. As it turns out, that the starting rotation's actually been really good for the first month and a half. The bullpen's been inconsistent and iffy, and the offense just hasn't been there at all, not on a consistent basis. So all you add it all up, and they're 8 games under .500 going into tonight's game against the Yankees, and I just don't think that they could fall much further back than where they are now before you start seeing them wheeling and dealing some of these potential free agents like Hosmer, Moustakas, Kane, Kelvin Herrera, the closer.
What are your thoughts on as to why Escobar and Gordon have been so much in that funk at the plate? And I know Alex just had a little baby girl, so he's not with the team right now, but both those guys are under 200 by several points.
Yeah, and they both had taken their turns at hitting leadoff, hoping that would help shake things up for Alex. And it's not really working for Escobar right now. It's hard to say. I think there are different cases for sure. Escobar still has this penchant for swinging at first pitches, no matter where it's thrown. And to lead off a game, especially on the road when you're the first batter and you pop up the first pitch, it's really kind of a demoralizing moment, I think, for the Royals. And he just cannot lay off. He can't lay off bad pitches either. So he kind of gets himself out a lot. And with Gordon, it seems like there are a few things going on. To me, the biggest surprise with Gordon is his lack of power. You know, he doesn't have a home run yet this year, and that's surprising to me because even in the past when he's gone poorly, he's managed to get the ball out of the ballpark once in a while, and he hasn't come close, really, to getting the ball out of the park. So I don't know exactly what's going on there. But the other thing that strikes me when I watch him play is when he was at his best in 2011, 10 and 11, those years where he was at 45 to 50 doubles and getting 20 home runs and hitting 280 to 300, he was using the entire field. He would put, he'd hit the ball to left center and up the middle, and you don't see him doing that much anymore. And I don't know if it's a conscious third or so teams shift him and shift him dramatically as they shift any player that I see in baseball. And when he does make solid contact, he seems to make it into the shift. And it's going to be frustrating. I know it's frustrating to see a short base hit and against any other defense, go up to the second baseman's glove who's standing and throw Alex out from there. I think he still has to work on some adjustments, even this late in his career. And he's 5 for his last 12. Has a little modest 4-game hitting streak. I think he's actually back with the team tonight. Won't be in the lineup. We'll see him in the lineup tomorrow. So maybe he's onto something going now. We'll see. But it's unfortunate for Royals fans, for Husker fans, to see Alex scuffling as badly as he is right now.
Well, we'll see if he can get it turned around. Kansas City Star's Blair Kirchhoff with us at Blair Kirchhoff on Twitter. Blair, we'll do this again, bud. Always great to catch up and talk. Thanks for a few minutes.
Okay, Chris, take care.
Good stuff from Blair. It's National Clicketer Ticket Campaign. 6,000 hours of additional traffic enforcement. Buckle up. Save a life. The message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. Who has the best quarterback situation in the Big Ten?
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Okay, we'll get into quarterback situation here in a second per ESPN.com. The most favorable quarterback setup in situations. Recruiting news in a moment. Social media is going nuts. Ron Burgundy will take us live. Maybe not, but know, you can talk recruiting and also diamonds and beauty with Rick at Sauter Heyman. He's there for all of it. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman, 100% real diamonds, pure-grown diamonds, except they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. Pure-grown diamonds, all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and many customers think they're as beautiful or more beautiful. See for yourself, eco-friendly and sustainable. 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. That's savings. And they are some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history, an extensive history. And they're Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman. 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, or out west in Grand Island, SauterHeyman.com. Speaking of out west, further west than Grand Island, Dante Williams is in San Diego. Who else is in San Diego? Isaac Taylor Stewart. He's a cornerback. He's phenomenal. The world has offered him. And what I'm seeing now on social media is the infamous black flag. I've seen it from Buki's Twitter account. Forgive me, I follow a recruit, him. And from Dante Williams. Does that mean Nebraska has commit number 11?
It's looking that way.
It looks that way. We just don't know who. We just know that it's been confirmed by Buki, and it's been confirmed by Dante Williams. We don't know the who. Is it Isaac Taylor Stewart, cornerback, San Diego? Or is it Super Mario Goodrich that many Nebraska fans have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting on? That's where I'm betting.
Or is it another three-name guy?
You know, the three-name thing always...
Although you added the super.
Yeah, well, Super Mario, I mean, come on, that's pretty sweet.
It is.
We'll know officially when Buki or Dante tell us. But Nebraska, it sounds like, has another commitment, but no confirmation as of yet, officially. We'll keep it locked into HaleVarsity.com for all the breaking news. Okay, so ESPN.com and Dan Murphy have thrown out the who has the best quarterback situation in the Big Ten. Before we tell you how they vote, where do you put Nebraska's quarterback situation in the Big Ten? Is this a different article?
No, I'm just kind of getting mesmerized by JT Barrett's stats.
That's fine. How were his stats last year when he had to throw to win? They were bad. He finished horribly. Didn't throw the ball against Michigan well. Sure as hell didn't throw the ball well against Penn State. And they got shut out with two picks against Clemson.
I don't know. I think Husker fans would take 62% completion percentage and 24 touchdown passes.
I know. 24 touchdown
passes. His freshman year, I forgot, he threw 34 touchdown passes his freshman year.
Yeah, that's fine.
And 65% completion percentage.
And what happened?
Whew.
And what happened? Did he get hurt?
That was his sophomore year.
Oh, so I'm sorry. They won a national championship without him his sophomore year.
Yep.
Okay.
Still could have maybe won it with him, though.
Yeah, but didn't his freshman year, I mean, did he replace Braxton? Yeah, I think he did.
I think so.
Here's my thing, and this may change with Kevin Wilson, but Ohio State's quarterbacks have seemed to hit a ceiling where they're really good, and yes, they're between 60 and 65% completion percentage, and they're beating
Nebraska. You set the bar at 34 touchdowns your freshman year. That might be the ceiling, you know?
But they don't win a national championship without Cardale coming in.
Yeah, but I almost feel that's like, that was so unique, an outlier. Here's this guy sitting all year long, and then he wins the three biggest games of his career win.
You know why? Because he could hit the long ball.
For sure. And he was way fresher than anybody else, and he was like he could truck stick guys.
Right. But he could throw. And right now, I don't know if Barrett can throw to win against elite. Okay, can he throw to beat Nebraska? He did. Can he throw to beat Indiana? He did. Can he throw to beat Michigan State? No, they didn't beat Michigan State 2 years ago. Okay. I'm getting nitpicky here on JT Barrett. The guy's phenomenal. He's a perfect quarterback for this offense and system. But when push came to shove and they needed to complete some passes because they didn't have the same O-line or a guy named Zeke running the ball when they've been not at the elite level themselves with O-line and backfield, can he do it himself? And early in the year, he looked incredible against Oklahoma. You're like, God, this guy can run, this guy can throw, this guy can go deep. Well, there's going to be a lot more.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more on him because they don't have Samuel. Okay? And he's a dream. I got to see it. Okay?
But I mean, Cardell didn't set the world on fire when the next season.
No,
because once the sample size got bigger, you're like, eh.
Well, that wasn't fair to anyone in that quarterback room because they didn't know who the hell they were going to play. They're always rotating them.
Yeah, obviously they mishandled it for sure.
I mean, you just over your shoulder and you're not sure, so you press. Versus it's yours to lose, and you went in there and you threw it deep.
So you got 14 quarterbacks available, Big Ten starting. JT, not your number one guy then?
Hell no.
Hell no.
Hell. Whoa. To the no. McSorley's my number one quarterback.
Okay.
Young. And I'm going with the theory.
We're just going for a season. Like, we're not going career right now. We're just...
Well, the guy played 1 year. He hasn't had much of a career.
Yeah. But to win you any game, you go with McSorley over Barrett?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, I'd probably have him second, so it's not far behind.
He's a better thrower. He's an athlete that can run it and scramble it.
So can JT.
That's fine. I think McSorley's a much, much better thrower.
Okay.
And I look
and at... And he might be over time. Right now, I'd probably go JT
still.
Well,
but I look at how they finished against some elite talent.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, the last three games of the year, you had McSorley go nuts. Barrett, however, did not.
Mm-hmm. So who would you go third? Would you go like ESPN? Thorson out of Northwestern?
See, I like Thorson a lot. Maybe I'm nuts here, and this is blind faith. But from a pure talent standpoint, dare I?
I think you're going there.
Dare I? Am I not a Tanner Lee guy?
Oh,
Thorson, I know.
There it is.
I think he'd take Thorson third. And I know Spate is a manager. But I don't know, man. Is Tanner Lee going to be a guy that when we're looking at the end of the season, we're going, man, Nebraska's quarterback situation was much better in this offense and much better than some other teams had it. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But would you take a Tanner Lee over a Spate?
Oh, looking at his past stats, no.
But does he wow you?
The Spate?
Yeah.
No, he doesn't.
The 20-6 wows me. Okay, the guy's good,
mm-hmm.
But I'll say this: homeboy's had elite talent around him. They've had good lines. They've had a great defense. They've had draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
He's not your Andrew Luck quarterback for Harbaugh. He's more of your Hogan manager.
Yeah, look, I mean, word of mouth, Tanner Lee, raising my hand, he's way up here. But when you look at the stats,
is he in your top four? No. Yes or no?
He could be fourth. He could be fourth.
He could beat out Spade or he could beat out Thorson.
I'd probably have Thorson ahead of you.
I think
right
what
now.
Thorson's done in 2 years, seeing the growth and seeing him throw the football has been impressive. We don't know about Lee, and I like McSorley over Barrett. I think he's a better thrower.
Yeah. And I disagree, but I also can see it too. Down the road. It's just, you know, Tanner Lee, you go from 55% completion percentage your freshman year to 51, or you round up, you go 52.
Mm-hmm.
And then career 23 touchdown passes, career 21 interceptions. So obviously, like I said, word of mouth is up here, but the stats are, the line's a bit lower.
Here's what I think's going to happen if Nebraska is to thrive and succeed. Okay? You're going to have a jump because of this change of scenery, similarly to Russell Wilson. You ask people in the ACC.
Can see that.
You ask people in the Big Ten about Russell Wilson. How excited were they when he made the move from NC State to Wisconsin? And I'm thinking of Coach DiNardo specifically on our show going, you know, I wouldn't that. Who gives a crap? It's Russell's kind of a one-to-one ratio guy, touchdown to interception. He's a risk taker. Then he's like, well, Russell had a lot of risks he needed to take at NC State to even get him to 6 or 7 wins. He's running for his life. His offensive line was bad. He didn't have weapons around him. Does that sound eerily similar?
For sure.
I mean, again, let's sell gold here, but that's, I mean, if Nebraska is going to be above this over-under of 6 and they hit the 9-10 and they make a stride towards knocking off some of the teams in the West, it's going to be Lee that'll be the reason why. One of the main reasons offensively.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Nebraska's, the guy I think is probably a pretty darn good quarterback that he's wishing that the coaching change would have happened sooner is Blau. I think Blau can throw the football for Purdue.
Mm, yeah.
They're just a joke. They're just not very good. But I think Blau is very talented. I think he can throw the football. I mean, if Blau was at Iowa, he may be way up there. I think Purdue's quarterback situation is probably as good as a number of teams in the league. You're just not going to know because they're going to be clawing for 3 or 4 conference wins. But I think Nebraska's quarterback situation in the Big Ten, you can argue it top 4 if you think big picture, not having to have any proof in front of you. If you just do the puzzle pieces of system, strength, coaches, you mix that, all those ingredients, and you might get something that tastes pretty good. But I think Penn State's got the best quarterback situation because of what McSorley did as a first-year starter and who he did it against to end the year. Barrett, meanwhile, 1-2 to finish the season.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
It wouldn't be a Tuesday without the NFL talk, right? Speaking of NFL,
the No Fun League, huh?
Your starting running back for Detroit, who will have a Pro Bowl season, we all hope. Amir Abdullah with us tomorrow. That's awesome. Okay. Here's some thoughts here on NFL rule changes. So the roster info, once you make the 90, you're there, you're good. There's not a 90 to 75 and a 75 to 53. It's now 90 to 53 roster size. So guys that have made the team a la tryout, like Kevin Maurice, going to be hanging around for a little bit longer if you wouldn't have made the team.
Yeah, and I haven't decided if that would make Hard Knocks more exciting or less exciting.
Well, you're going to have more guys punted is the point.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I want to ask you, though. Group celebration. The league is going to dial back the snow angel, the jump shot. Those forms of celebration will now be allowed. That is good news if you're a celebration fan.
Which I am.
If you're old and crusty like me, you don't give a damn.
If you get off the lawn.
Just get across the goal line and get me some fantasy points, first of all. Second of all, make it an entertaining, exciting, drama-filled game, specifically if it's Monday night or Thursday night. And let's do some sort of punishment towards the schedule maker, okay? Because if I have the crap on TV that was on Monday Night Football and Thursday night last year, this year, I'm going to lose my mind.
Those aren't going away, man. Those are moneymakers.
No, I'm talking about who you're picking to play. Schedule better. Be right is my point. Because for the most part, I've been happy with Monday night or Thursday night games. Now, it's a flex, and Sunday nights are your new Monday nights. So Sunday night, you're going to have marquee national mm-hmm. games, and I'm good with it. Those have been good games, and even if they weren't good games, they were at least intended to be. But I don't need to see Cleveland-Baltimore Thursday night with all due respect to our friend Sam Cook. I just don't.
No, I'm with you.
I mean, please keep teams that have sucked for 5 years. Chicago. How many times was Chicago on TV last year? 80?
Oh, yeah.
I know they're always on TV, but I'm talking primetime games.
Yep.
Bears were on three of the first five weeks. Awful.
Yeah. Keep the bad teams playing when there's about a million teams playing at noon on Sunday.
Yeah.
So that you can watch your regional or select one that you want.
Slot them and go that way. I need Green Bay. I need Seattle. I need Kansas City. I need New England. I need Donkey Land. There's really about eight teams. Eight Dallas, Minnesota. No, maybe not Minnesota anymore, except for our dear friend Searles. For the most part, Minnesota can be the 3:30 thing. I'll watch that.
Yeah. And speaking of Minnesota, I tweet out Teddy Bridgewater on the football field, moving around, taking snaps.
That is nothing short of a miracle.
That is huge.
Since there was potential amputation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm serious.
No, I'm serious, too. I can't believe he's out there.
And they did not give him his extension slash option year because he almost lost his leg.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's great news for the Vikings. Here, unsportsmanlike penalties on touchdowns. 2012, just three. 2013, there was eight. 2014, there was 16. 2015, 20. And last year, there was 29. So, obviously, things have gotten out of hand. Let's let these guys celebrate. Like, come on. Do you have a favorite celebration? Like, one of mine is Joe Horn going to grab the cell phone.
See, that was excessive and stupid, and you got to be better than Joe Horn to do that. I thought Terrell Owens.
Boy. You're the get off my lawn guy, aren't you?
Well, Terrell just needs to shut up. I always liked Chad Ochocinco.
Oh, yeah.
Johnson. I like what
Hall
he did.
The
coat was good, but my favorite part was when he putted the ball with the pylon.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that, and then and then he was giving mouth to mouth to the football. Yeah. That was my favorite ever.
And the guy and did he sleep on it too?
Yeah, he went night night. He's putting the secondary to sleep.
Yeah,
I like Gronk a lot because he makes me laugh. And the time they were playing in England, he did the whole Buckingham Palace guard.
Yep, that was good.
That was funny.
The classic Randy Moss to Packers fans.
Yeah. You know, I don't care. I mean, Randy was, that was against Tyrone Williams, so that hurt some of us Husker fans.
And then also the other news, overtime's going to 10 minutes instead of 15.
No, I'm going to have more.
Because of player safety. Because overtime happens all the time.
Forget player safety on this thing. And just give me college football overtime rules.
I totally agree.
Put it on the 25 and get a stop or get a score.
Mm-hmm.
End of discussion. That's exciting.
That is.
The overtime
more exciting
rules
than ties.
Are a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Just go that route. Put it at the 25 and let it play on. I know it's a condensed area. It's not a player safety.
No. I mean, that's what they're saying, but it's not.
No, it's just they're worn out. They don't want to.
You're taking 5 minutes off overtime, which doesn't happen often. So
who cares? No, the overtime rule is just stupid. I don't want ties, but get creative with it. You have a lot of fun with, I mean, how. I don't know about you, but I remember about every overtime game I've seen in college because they're shootouts.
Oh, yeah. They're exciting.
I mean, think about the Pitt-Clemson finish.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one overtime game I remember. And things are condensed. It's harder, shorter area to try and score in. So that's what I need. That's what I want. Give me the 25-yard line college football rule for overtime. We'll have to talk to some of our NFL buddies about this rule and what they prefer. Jay Moore will be with us Thursday, likely. We'll take callers three, callers four right now for a premium online subscription, 6 months for free to you. with HailVarsity.com. Caller 3 and Caller 4 right now, a subscription to HailVarsity.com, the ultimate online experience for you, the Nebraska fan. And message board community is tremendous. And inside info, recruiting analysis, and breaking news. There could be breaking news here shortly on another commit for Nebraska football. Find it with HailVarsity.com. But get it right now. Caller 3 and Caller 4, a six-month online subscription for you. 466-3776. 466-3776. Toll-free 1-800-825-5865. Great inside information, in-depth recruiting, and breaking news. Caller 3, Caller 4, right now. For you, a six-month online subscription, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. TJ will hook you up, Caller 3, Caller 4 now for that six-month subscription to HailVarsity.com, 800-825-5865 or 466-3776.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Well, maybe another commit for 2018. Keep it tuned to HailVarsity.com for all your updates. And if you need a breaking news alert, figure out how with HailVarsity.com. So Blair Kirkhoff was with us today. Mitch Sherman with us today. We talked a little bit about the SB Nation story out there and recruits being that age right now where they're Y2K babies. Yeah, time flies. I feel old saying it as well. But what's your team rep right now? What's your program rep now compared to what it was when they were born? And a lot of programs trying to get back to that elite status. Is history that important to recruits? Spent time with that. We talked some Royals baseball as they've been struggling. Also some Chiefs football with Blair Kirkhoff. We got into some recruiting news. Dante Williams and Buki Radley-Hiles giving you the black flag sign, which means there's probably somebody in the 2018 recruiting class. And then we debated quarterback situation in the Big Ten. Who's got it the best? And where's Nebraska in that conversation? You could talk me into saying Nebraska, even though your starting quarterback hasn't taken a snap yet at Nebraska, may have the fourth best situation based on talent, upside, projection. Clayton Thorson's pretty good. Spate's pretty good at Michigan. But are they marketably more talented than Tanner Lee? Can't say yes to that. I just can tell you their win totals their last 2 years. And give me McSorley over JT Barrett. I sound like such a Barrett hater. I think he's a really good football player. I do. But he reminds me of Braxton, where maybe he's hit a ceiling. Braxton's problem was he was a turnover machine. And Barrett's problem, when push came to shove, he couldn't hit a deep throw to save his life, which means people crowded the box, and Ohio State's dominant run game wasn't as dominant. And when push came to shove, they couldn't hit a pass to open up the offense or exploit a defense. Think about Nebraska. All the years, they were probably last or second to last in the Big 8 or the Big 12 when it came to passing attempts. You're going to run the option and just smoke you. But when it came to yards per pass attempt, they killed it because they'd play action you with that old fake option. They'd hit the tight end for about 45 right down the middle of the field, and they just wear you out.
I don't know if you're a Barrett hater. I just think you're probably more mesmerized with the way the season ended for McSorley.
Well, because he beat Ohio State. He beat Wisconsin.
Because would you have Barrett second?
Yeah, I kind of have to. I have to because of the record and where they finished. Because,
I mean, where was the love for Penn State and McSorley after that Pittsburgh loss, you know?
No,
I mean, they finished great.
No, that's fine. They finished great, and McSorley statistically finished great. And he did so against Ohio State. His numbers weren't great, but he had a great fourth quarter. And he was awesome against Wisconsin and USC. Talk to you tomorrow at 4:00.